For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strong.
Who said this? Quote, "I give my most solemn pledge that I will to the very last stand by the law of the state which forbids the marrying of white people with Negroes." Close quote. Abraham Lincoln said that in the Lincoln-Douglas debates on September 16, 1859. When he said that, it was a warning to America. But America was complacent. America slept. Who said this? Quote, "There is no room for two distinct races of white men in America, much less for two distinct races of black and white. I can conceive of no greater calamity than the assimilation of the Negro into our social and political life as our equal. Within 20 years, we can peacefully colonize the Negro to Africa and give him our language, literature, religion, and system of government under conditions in which he can rise to the full measure of manhood. This he can never do here. We can never attain the ideal union our fathers dreamed with millions of an alien inferior race among us whose assimilation is neither possible or desirable." Close quote. Abraham Lincoln said that shortly after the signing of his Emancipation Proclamation. It was a warning to America of what might come if the wrong course was followed. But Americans slept, and evil men forced us down that wrong course. Who said this? Quote, "There is a natural disgust in the minds of nearly all white people at the idea of an indiscriminate amalgamation of the white race and the black race. A separation of the races is the only perfect preventive of amalgamation. But as immediate separation is impossible, the next best thing is to keep them apart where they are not already together. If white and black people never get together in Kansas, they will never mix blood in Kansas. This is one self-evident truth." Close quote. Abraham Lincoln said that in Springfield, Illinois, on June 26, 1857. He was trying to warn us, but too many of us slept. Who said this? Quote, "The United States of America was established as a constitutional republic. When the Constitutional Convention had completed its labors, a citizen of Philadelphia asked Benjamin Franklin what kind of government had been set up. Franklin replied, 'A republic, if you can keep it.' The word democracy is not found in either the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. In all the state papers of presidents for the first 125 years, from Washington until Woodrow Wilson, there is no reference to the United States of America as a democracy." Beginning in 1933, the year President Franklin D. Roosevelt extended diplomatic recognition to communist Russia, we became a democracy. And since that time, a tremendous government-supported propaganda has been directed to all young people to teach them to scorn those who insist that this nation was established as a republic. Soon, the principal communist front organizations throughout the world began to incorporate the words democracy or democratic in their titles. Thus, in 1935, we found in the United States such communist organizations as the American League for Peace and Democracy, the Church League for Industrial Democracy, the North American Committee to Aid Spanish Democracy, and many more. By 1940, there were more than 60 communist front organizations in the United States, each with the word democracy or democratic in its corporate title. Close quote. Congressman James E. Van Zandt of Pennsylvania said that in a speech to the House of Representatives on March 30, 1953. It was a warning to America, but America slept. Who did this? He enacted a law which forbade anyone to be denied employment or housing or accommodation on account of their racial or ethnic background. He set up a government commission to enforce this law, which investigated claims of racial or ethnic discrimination and brought charges against employers or officials who were suspected of such discrimination. This law effectively eliminated the right of association. Henceforth, no one could freely decide who he would hire, who he could sell to, who he would work alongside. The law was officially called the All-Race Law. The year was 1920. The man who introduced the law was one Joseph Djougashvili, who 4 years later became head of state of the country where the All-Race Law was enacted, the Soviet Union, and who called himself Stalin. Americans should have seen the writing on the wall and acted to prevent such a tragedy from happening here. But too many, far too many of us were sleeping. Who said this? We are unable to read in the 14th Amendment any words or intendment which prohibit the state from enacting legislation to preserve the racial integrity of its citizens, so that it shall not have a mongrel breed of citizens. We find that there is no requirement that the state shall not legislate to prevent the obliteration of racial pride, but must permit the corruption of blood, even though it weaken or destroy the quality of its citizenship. Both sacred and secular history teach that nations have better advanced in human progress when they cultivate their own peculiar genius. Close quote. Justice Buchanan of the Supreme Court of Virginia said that in June 1955, writing in the unanimous decision upholding the constitutionality of the Virginia law barring interracial marriage. Even at that late date in the ongoing Jewish communist assault against America, the states of Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Colorado, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, Missouri, Nebraska, Nevada, North Carolina, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, West Virginia, and Wyoming all had laws making interracial marriage a crime. And many other states had had such laws just a few years earlier. Justice Buchanan was sounding a clarion call to Americans to wake up. But we slept. Who said this? Quote, "It seems that segregation is not only recognized in constitutional law and judicial decision, but that it is also supported by general principles of natural law. As nature had produced different species, so it has produced different races of men. Distinguishing racial features have not been produced by men or man-made laws. They are the result of processes of evolution, and it seems natural and customary for different species and different races to recognize and prefer as intimate associates their own kind. Nature has produced white birds, black birds, bluebirds, and redbirds, and they do not roost on the same limb or use the same nest. Such recognition and preference for their own kind prevails among other animals. It prevails among all people, among them the yellow, black, and red-skinned races. The law recognizes these natural and instinctive principles and practices of life. It does not attempt to inhibit them. It would be futile to attempt to do so. This nation's experience with the 18th Amendment shows that there are forces of nature that cannot be changed by constitutional amendment or judicial decree. During recent years, there has been a tendency, prompted by overzealous champions of democracy, to extend democratic processes and legal procedure into fields where they are not qualified to serve. This tendency has been incited and increased by open champions and subversive agents of the world revolution which has been advancing under the banner of communism. The open and avowed purposes of such revolutionaries is to eradicate all religion and to destroy our system of laws and jurisprudence. Those who intentionally or unwittingly are overburdening democratic and legal processes and destroying the delicate balance and apportionment of powers upon which our way of life depends play into the hands of the revolutionaries. While they may think they are championing freedom and liberalism, they are bringing about totalitarianism, which will destroy the very object they seek to serve. This court therefore concludes that segregation itself is not unconstitutional or unlawful." Close quote. Those were the words of, believe it or not, a federal district judge, a native of the state of Ohio, Judge Robert N. Wilkins, in 1952. The decision rendered found against the NAACP, an organization founded, funded, and for many years actually headed, not by blacks whose interests it purported to serve, but by Jews, many of them with long and documented ties to the anti-American movement described by Judge Wilkins, and which now loots America at will and defames, imprisons, or kills many of those who oppose its rule. But while these revolutionists were overturning our ancient laws, most of us were asleep. On May 17, 1954, the Supreme Court of the United States decreed that racial separation in America's public schools must end, regardless of the expressed wishes of the people and the traditions of 200 years. The court at that time was headed by a man named Earl Warren. While Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren made friendly visits at taxpayer expense to communist heads of state in Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Yugoslavia. Of six such foreign travels he made, five were to visit states of the communist bloc. So pro-communist was the Warren Court that Communist Party spokeswoman Dorothy Healey said on June 17, 1957, of three simultaneous decisions made by the court that day dismantling anti-communist legislation, quote, "This is the greatest victory the Communist Party has ever had," close quote. Earl Warren had almost no legal experience to qualify him for the position of Chief Justice of the highest court in the land, but that exalted office was his reward for supporting the takeover of the Republican Party by forces friendly to internationalism, Zionism, and communism, who were represented by Dwight Eisenhower in 1952. 4 days after the assassination of President John Kennedy in November 1963, the communist newspaper The Worker stated, quote, "We believe that President Johnson, on the one hand, and Congress, on the other, should act at once to appoint respective extraordinary investigating commissions with full power to conduct a searching inquiry into all the circumstances around the assassination of the president and the murder of the suspect. Such an investigating commission, headed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, should be composed of citizens and experts who enjoy the confidence of the nation." Close quote. 2 days after this communist editorial appeared, Lyndon Baines Johnson appointed the Chief Justice, Mr. Earl Warren, to head his President's Commission on the Assassination of President Kennedy, popularly known as the Warren Commission. The lie papers and the boob tubes, for some inexplicable reason, never mentioned the facts about Warren and his background. So we all slept. We are sleeping still. When the Warren Court handed down its decree declaring that henceforth America's schools must be racially mixed, upon what did they base their decision? Was it based upon law, precedent, or constitutional principles? No. For all of these at that time had stood steadfast during the entire history of this nation for separation of the races. The Warren Court's decision was based on the findings of self-described experts in the fields of psychology, sociology, and anthropology, fields which for decades had been infiltrated by aliens and by traitors in the service of America's enemies. They piously testified about the great psychological harm that was being inflicted by having white schools for white children and black schools for black children. The experts were certainly right, as anyone can see by observing how much better American schools are now than in 1954. Ostensibly on the basis of these flimsy and empirically unvalidated claims, but really just in accordance with what they planned to do all along, Warren and his accomplices changed the meaning of our Constitution and sentenced millions of sweet, innocent little boys and girls to a living hell, and in many cases to actual physical rape, torture, and death. One of these experts was one Theodore Brameld, an alleged authority on psychology who was perhaps not coincidentally an acknowledged member of at least 10 different Communist Front and Communist-dominated organizations, and whose name often appeared in a favorable light in the columns of the Communist newspaper, The Daily Worker. He was listed there as a supporter of an organization calling itself the American League and Democracy, which had formerly called itself the American League Against War and Fascism, and which was, according to the Senate Internal Security Committee, engaged, quote, "in an effort to create public sentiment on behalf of a foreign policy adapted to the interests of the Soviet Union," close quote, and which was in addition, quote, "the largest of the Communist Front movements in the United States," close quote. Another of these large-brained fellows to whom the court listened so intently was a man named E. Franklin Frazier, who had been cited by the U.S. House of Representatives for his membership in communist organizations no fewer than 18 times. He held a leading position in the communist magazine Social Work Today, which in its February 1942 issue gave him credit for making the magazine's progress possible. In 1949, Frazier wrote a book entitled The Negro in the United States, which was not only reviewed favorably in The Worker and the Daily People's World, but which was actually distributed by the Communist Party and advertised in its Workers' Bookshop catalogs for 1949 and 1950. Not only E. Franklin Frazier, but his book, which had been officially adopted by the Communist Party USA, were cited as authorities by the United States Supreme Court in their judicial decision outlawing racial separation in the public schools. Earl Warren's record was available to anyone who bothered to look for it at the time. Frazier's and Bramald's records were also available for anyone who cared to find them. They had been published in the Congressional Record on May 26, 1955, by Senator James O. Eastland. But most Americans preferred to remain asleep. It is to realize that your country is being taken over by its enemies. It is frightening to find yourself living in a conquered and occupied nation. It is terrifying to think of your future in a nation where our enemies have twisted and perverted the meaning of our founding documents and distorted and omitted the true statements and feelings of our founding fathers. So to avoid discomfort, to avoid fright, to avoid terror, we prefer to remain asleep. We fill our lives with the diminishing circle of little pleasures still allowed us by our new masters, or with the new pleasures which they serve up to us on their heaping plate of stinking pornography, mindless sports, and gratuitous violence, with the express purpose of distracting us from the real issues of life. Sleep is pleasant, and a little of it is necessary. But our enemies well know that continuous sleep differs little from death, and they also well know that if we sleep long enough, they will be able to kill us with impunity, an eventuality which has not yet transpired, primarily because they aren't finished raping us and sucking our blood. Americans have been warned so many times. I warn you again now. We must awaken. We must base all of our decisions on what is best for the survival of our people. We must understand that as great as our churches and our governmental principles may be, it is not what a man believes about eternity or what system of government he advocates that makes him one of us. It is race. It is biological kinship alone that determines who we are. It is on the basis of what is best for the survival of our people that we must judge the goodness of any action or policy. If an action hurts our people, it is bad. If it helps our people, it is good. We made our society and all its institutions because of who we are, not the other way around. Nations are biological entities, not political or geographic ones. It is on that basis that we will survive as a people or pass forever from the universe. Our enemies now occupy the highest offices of the land, and do not be deceived. They have as their servants the leaders of both political parties. Now, we who are awakened must not only feel the severe discomfort of this ugly reality, but also the hatred and scorn of our enemies as spewed forth daily from their printing presses and broadcasting towers. They will call us haters, but we do not hate other peoples. We hate only he who would destroy all races and nations, he whose tools were once communism and revolution, but are now internationalism, Zionism, and the police powers of the state he has usurped from the sleeping citizens. There is no truth-telling broadcast like this one. Please support American Dissident Voices. I do not know how long we will continue to have freedom of speech in America. I do not know how long we will be able to continue to afford this expensive radio time. If you believe that we are doing something of value, something you would like to see continue, I urge you to act today. We will send you our monthly publication, Free Speech, for just $40 per year. Subscribe to Free Speech today by sending a gift of $40 or more to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. If you would like a sample copy of Free Speech and a copy of our big book and tape catalog for patriots listing over 400 books and tapes that the censors of political correctness don't want you to see, just send us $1. Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Our announcers will repeat the address in a few moments. Until next time, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of Edward Hale, who said, "I am only one, but I am one. I can't do everything, but I can do something. And what I can do, that I ought to do. And what I ought to do, by the grace of God, I shall do."
You have been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for a book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute two international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high-fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.